Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm your host, Tom Pickup, and welcome to another special episode on the Really 007 podcast, where tonight we will look at the greatest henchmen and women of the James Bond film series. There are various places you can find us and listen in, including iTunes and Spotify. Keep sharing our episodes, and once again, thank you for rating and recommending us. Special shout out to fan Alison Ratcliffe. Thanks for your support. We're available on most social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just look for Really 007 and join in the conversation. Right, we've got so many henchmen to chat about tonight that this could be the start of a debate that never ends. But I do have three lovely gents with me this evening. We've got two regular contributors, Matthew Pickup and Rob Parker. Good evening, gents.
Good evening.
Good evening, Tom.
Nice to have you guys. But we've also got our first guest in the form of Mr. Stephen Carty, who is a renowned film critic. Good evening, Mr. Carty.
Good evening, Tom, Rob, Matthew, Minister, Chief of Staff.
He's our kind of guy. He's our kind of guy, this guy.
He is. He is. It's a really 007 squad, isn't it? It really is. There's a lot of people involved.
I'm so glad that niche gag actually landed. I just thought nobody, I was scared. Yeah.
You've been waiting
for the equivalent of blowing the bloody doors off, mate. Why Australian? No reason to be Australian.
When Cockney goes Australian.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, yes. Nice to meet you. Just for the benefit of all the listeners, would just briefly tell us a bit about yourself, what you do in your job, and how you've come to be involved in the world of James Bond.
Well, at the moment, I'm a freelance film critic. I write for Radio Times, and I do reviews on BBC Radio Scotland. As far as James Bond go, I can't remember the age I was when I started watching them. I remember I was very young, too young to be watching them. My dad said, "Oh, this Doctor No's on the TV. This is James Bond. You're going to love this." That was the first one I watched, and then, I mean, like you guys, I taped them off the TV and then watched them over and over and over to the point where I had to stop watching them because the dialogue was losing meaning for me because I'd heard it so many times. Like you guys, it was just coming into my life in small ways. Like, for example, my friend and I were studying maths. We had a maths tutor together, and we had a calculator, a huge old-fashioned calculator, that looked like the ATAC from For Your Eyes Only.
Oh, ATAC to say so.
So we were doing math tutorial one day and he threw it to me and it missed and smashed against the cupboard and I just heard and said, "Well, that's detente, comrade. You don't have it."
Bravo. Bravo.
Dark kind of guy. Brilliant.
And yeah, I'm
going to take a step back from Bond here. It's becoming a bit too obsessive. But yeah, I mean, I watch the films over and over and over again. And One of the nice things was I actually stopped watching them when I first became a film critic because I thought I'm going to have to spend more time watching other films and widening my knowledge base. So a few years ago, I watched them all again for the first time in years. It was glorious. It was like watching them all again for the first time, falling in love with John Barry again. And I was thinking, oh, is License to Kill going to be as good as I remember as a kid? And it, oh, man, it still is.
Oh, yes.
Well, yeah. No secret that that's, I think, pretty much the Really 007 pod, unofficially one of the favourites, definitely.
Good, good.
We're massive pretty much dog. Yes. Oh.
Yeah. It's just his voice. Anything he says, he brings such weight and gravity. Shaken, not stirred. It's just, what was the Patrick Stewart just walking the room? He brings such importance. A massive Bond fan, and after listening to about 3 minutes of the Octopussy podcast, I thought, yeah, these guys are my sort of guys. They like they like Octopussy. I'm in here. This is my sort of place.
There are very odd people out there. That's what we found out. We're doing this. No offense, Stephen. You seem a lot less odd than we are. Yes. So,
my wife was just
really interesting. Yes. Well. Yeah. Yes, I think they all would. Yeah, I think they're a bit worried about what's going on in these recording sessions. I think they think it's a bit sad. That's interesting. The Dr. No was actually the first one you saw. Did you watch the others more or less in the same sort of in the right order? Because I remember growing up that we just sort of had the few on video and you watched those ones over and over again. You didn't really know why Roger Moore was Bond sometimes or why Sean was sometimes Bond, and it didn't really make any sense until you got older. But particularly as a film critic as well, has that sort of cast your eye on them in a bit of a different way?
Do you know what? I've always wondered if I was old enough to be of age when Roger Moore was cast. I've always wondered if it would have bothered me at the time, because like you're saying, I was just a kid. You know, one was Roger Moore, one was George Lazenby, one was Tim Dalton. I loved them all when I was a kid. So I'd love to go back and wonder if I would have been sort of gnashing my teeth over the fact of there's another Bond, you know, Connery's Bond. That's it. There's no other Bond.
Yeah.
Now I don't love all of them, but I like all of them. I think they all bring something to it. And one of the great things about Bond fandom is if you want a 60s thriller, you know, if you want a purist Bond, you watch Connery. If you want some entertainment and you want someone with the biggest bell bottoms you've ever seen, you watch a Roger Moore. If you want Fleming, you know, watch Dalton. It sounds cheesy, but there is something for everyone. There's a Bond film for every mood. You know, I could put a Bond film on after this podcast and I could think, what am I in the mood for? Could be Octopus, it could be License to Kill, could be Man with the Golden Gun, you can go anyway.
But what if you're depressed? Does that mean you should watch Daniel Craig Bonds, or would that not help it at all? I'm being naughty again.
Leading the witness.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Quantum of Solace for me is a frustrating film because I think there is a good film buried in there somewhere. I mean, it needs a dramatic re-edit. The action scenes are all over the place. I liked Skyfall quite a bit, not as much as when it came out. For me, it falls down a bit every time I watch it. Mm. And Spectre is a dull, lifeless film. And I think there's been a shadow cast on Craig's time as Bond because we've been left with Spectre so long. It's been sitting there in our minds for so long.
Yeah,
I really hope No Time to Die is a lot better than Spectre. But, you know, if not, we've still got 20-odd other films we can watch over and over and over again.
Yes. That's the spirit.
Absolutely. That is the spirit. Oh, it's a call to arms for Bond fans everywhere, that.
Call to arms. So tonight, though, we are concentrating on the henchmen and women, as we've said. First, though, we'll have our regular quiz. Now, normally, of course, it's John Kell. It's the John Kell who introduces and hosts the quiz. But in his absence, Mr. Rob Parker is taking on the baton. So, Rob, over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm quite intimidated stepping into the dulcet-toned shoes of John. Does that work? No. We'll make it work.
It somehow works.
But no, I'm really... It somehow works. So, John always likes to create a buzzer sound, doesn't he, for the quizzes. I was thinking, like, what sound is appropriate for, like, a hench person quiz? And I was thinking, like, the only thing that really fits is, like, a Wilhelm scream. Like, ah! I'm not going to make anyone do that. Because we've been hysterics, I think, to begin with. I was thinking, Pat, we'll be blowing the bloody doors off, man. ship commercials, mate. I think we could do. I did have a good idea, and now it's gone. If we do a Louis Jordan kill bomb, that's probably we could do that. So whoever I hear first say kill bomb, I'll go to them. So. Question one. John, I'm sorry, I'm butchering this for you, mate. This is your segment. right, question one. A gentleman does Vijay Amritraj in with a yo-yo in The Magnificent Octopussy. But what is that gentleman's name in the credits? We've gone for detail again here.
The guy who... with the yo-yo type thing.
Yeah.
Kiel Bond.
Oh, go for it. Stephen, go for it.
Sorry, that was terrible.
No, that was brilliant.
Is it a generic term like buzzsaw guy or something like that?
It is a generic term. It's not that one.
Kiel Bond.
I mean, yes, sir.
Yo-Yo Man.
Sadly not. Really same close, mate. Though. You know, we could be for ages like Yo-Yo Guy or...
Yo-yoing
man
through
with
the answers.
Razor sword throwing thing.
I don't think we're going to get it wrong.
I'll just say...
I'll go with whatever's been closest so far, actually. Once Matt's had a go, I'll go with whatever's been closest. I'll literally clear your mind, think about what that man did in the most basic of terms, and then say it.
Buzzsaw assassin? I mean,
I love how the fact that you tried to make it so simple and you were still too complicated. it's just called Thug with Yo-Yo.
That maybe rings a bell, actually.
Yeah. Right, so I'm afraid no
you should
point.
Know that.
Nil point. Thug with Yo-Yo.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh, Thug. You know. More skilled.
A skilled labourer. question two. I think this might be easy, so we'll go for it from there. Question two is, and remember the buzzword, what number inspector is Cronsty?
Kiel Bond.
Yes, Stephen.
Two.
Yes! 1-0 to Mr. Stephen Carthing. Superb.
Well done.
Off the mark. Question made. The relief is all mine, actually. I was quite worried.
The pleasure will be all mine. My answer, really.
Question three. Where was Hervé Villechaize born?
Kiel Bond.
And if... Yes, Matt.
Mexico? Or do you want...
No. I could do with my own, noise.
Yeah.
I'll try and develop something
Kiel Bond.
Yes, was that you, Tom?
Est-il français? La France?
I mean, you could have some of a point for that. But it's better. Stephen, do you have anything you'd like to come in with at this point?
I feel like I should know the answer because I remember him from, was it Fantasy Island he was on?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm terrified of guessing in case it makes it seem like a stereotype.
On that score, you won't get worse than Mexico.
No, bang on.
No, I'd be purely guessing. I'd be throwing a dart at a board.
Tom, you can have the point on this. It was Nazi-occupied Paris in 1943. What a stat!
That's brilliant.
Fact, even.
Flippy,
eh? Yeah. Question
Activist
four.
Control, my word.
Yeah. What country is Eric Kriegler representing in For Eyes Only? Oh, go for it, Stephen.
It's North Germany. East Germany, sorry. East Germany.
You got it. East Germany.
Save it.
2-0 to unbelievable. And that actually is a win. Oh, no, it's not. Sorry, Tom. You've got... You couldn't pull back a draw. I'm so sorry.
I'm out.
Did he get hot?
Yeah. And for that reason. Yeah. Question five. This is stupid. Which James Bond villain was voted sexiest villain in People Magazine's Sexiest Men issue?
Kill Bond.
Stephen, go for it.
Will be Marceau? Target.
No. Sexiest Men issue.
Oh, my God. Still.
Kill Bond.
Yes, man.
Scaramanga?
Nope. Oh,
that was
insane. Henchman?
Oh, is it
a
henchman?
Right, yeah. But yeah,
there's
a question
about it. Yeah.
Kill
when
Bond.
Was this done, Rob? The
yes, Matt.
Stamper?
Oh, yeah, surely.
Should be. Should be.
He's not well known enough, though, is he?
No, no, he wasn't. He wasn't. If I give you the year of 2001, will that help?
Is it that's when the vote was?
2002.
Oh, Kiel Bond.
Oh.
Yes, Matt.
Zhao.
Yes. 3-1-1. But we have a new champion to herald and crown.
Scrambled it, Matt.
Well done, Stephen.
Wanders in and trashes everybody. Superb, Stephen.
I need to admit something.
Yes.
Every year at the Edinburgh Film Festival, they have a quiz for film critics, and I'm on the team that usually wins. Now, that is nothing to do with me, because the guys on my team are just anoraks like you would not believe. So we're trying to defend the crown, and I'm usually sitting there just, I get the odd question, but I contribute very little. This year, there was a Bond question.
Yeah.
So about three heads have turned to me. We're like, okay, you know, time for you to step up. I got it wrong. It was just so demoralising for a week afterwards.
Oh, no.
What was the question, Stephen, if you don't mind me?
I can't remember the specifics, but it was something to do with how many times has Bond been to... I think it was something like how many times has Bond been to Venice or Italy, something like that.
That's quite a difficult,
That is really
aware of Moonraker, definitely. And Casino Royale, because they've got the kind of houses at the sink.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But there was a huge amount of debate over From Russia With Love, whether he was actually in Italy or not. And I can't remember what happened, but whatever way I said, and the other guy in the team said, they went with my opinion and it was wrong. And
no. Haunting you today.
Oh, man.
I should have thrown a kettle over a pub.
Very good.
Very good. Very good. Right. Well, thank you, Rob. As I say, that was superb. I feel like I know far less than I did about henchmen, but we'll try and catch up nonetheless. How does someone qualify as a Bond film henchman? It's quite a difficult one to ask. We've got hundreds and hundreds of villains, if you look through, from the very, you know, minor villains, the assassins, the femme fatales. And I was trying to think, really, more of the stereotypical, the muscle man or muscle woman who rarely leaves the boss's side. They should be physically strong, a real threat to Bond himself. And so, you know, Dr. What's his name? Hans Glaub, or those kind of people. I'm not really sure that they're going to pose much of a physical threat, to be honest. But they should live long in the memory of the audience. And you never know. By the end of this, we might decide between ourselves who our favourite henchmen are. So while some of these traits are present in individuals, others are not. So whereas Elvis from Quantum of Solace may never leave Dominic Green's side, he's of no physical threat and barely registers. So we won't be including him. So before
they do like a character poster for him as well, the poor man.
Yeah, I think our good friend John is—he actively hates Elvis, and I think it partly because it's soiling the real Elvis's good name as well.
Well, yeah,
shocking.
Even Rory is getting a poster nowadays.
Yeah,
very good. He is the poster boy of No Time to Die.
Colonel Arumov had one in for GoldenEye, his own character poster.
He did.
What is going on here? What is happening?
It's on Trevelyan's bedroom window. Sorry, bedroom door.
Next is a pan of strawberries.
Oh. We will be mentioning those later.
Hang my head in these niche.
Do you think
women aren't like that in real life?
Yeah, yeah. Do you think there is a teenager in this country, or there's ever been a teenager in this country, who's had Colonel Rhubarb up on their wall? Like, you know, like when they get in at night, like, you know, going to bed. Like,
I want to know.
Like,
please tweet us. Oh, I'd like to know if there is anyone.
If anyone did have this, please get
come out with your hands above you.
You have 10 seconds.
So sad. Guys, before we move on, what first of all, you, Math, what do you think the sort of, in your mind, if someone says Bond henchman, what, not necessarily who would you think of, but what kind of, if there was going to be another Bond that comes out soon, we don't know anything about it, you hear that someone's going to play a henchman, what would you be expecting?
I would say, I think it's, yeah, that physical presence is required. Maybe not just in terms of strength, but they pose a physical threat by, you know, they might have an interesting contraption or weapon that poses Bond a threat, and others, of course. I think I immediately think of someone who almost blindly follows the villain in whatever they do, and he's almost, you know, a bit like, I think Gobinda is a great example of what I would think of a typical henchman, although he doesn't have a particular, you know, interesting gadget or something. But I do think he's someone who poses a physical threat. He does anything basically that Kamal Khan asks him to.
Yeah. Out there.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Gotta go.
And obviously, I think Oddjob and Jaws are other classic ones who've got the interesting physical appearance. You almost think, which I really like, you know, I'm not sure how Bond's going to get the better of these guys because they seem pretty invincible, but like he won't be able to overpower them. Plus, they've got this extra special, you know, the hat and the teeth. So I would say those are my... what I would think of when I think of henchmen. Others are quite difficult to say whether they are henchmen or not, or whether they're just like hired assassins, because there's some people we might get onto who you never actually see them with the main villain.
Yeah.
So whether you could call them a henchman, they're like subcontracted to do to do their bidding. yeah. So yeah, those would be my thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's anyone who's got that like intellectual punch where it's going to push Bond to places that you don't know whether he can match. So, you know, yeah, I mean, like, I've got to be honest, like, Jaws never was a sinister henchman for me. It's just massive, which is really his main sort of, you know, key skill. And obviously, you know, like, if we talk about intellectual equals, I mean, in Spy Who Loved Me, which, you know, is let's face it, is Jaws' finest hour, he gets outwitted by a look, like, oh, you know, looking upwards. So you can't really say that it's intellectually pushing Bond. And not that intellectuality is anything to do with it, but it's more that, like, I think if you were going to put two next to each other, I'll just pick two right off the top of my head, Jaws and Dario, say, for example. I find Dario far scarier, far more intimidating as a presence, because you know he will go to those places that Jaws just probably wouldn't even think of. You know, so, yeah, I think that, yeah, it's got to be about mindset, where these people will go to. I thought Red Grant would go as far as necessary. He would go as far as necessary to take Bond out. Mayday as well would go as far. Until, obviously, Roger Moore's eyebrows came in play and seduced the pants off her. But, and then it was no longer an issue. Spring, yeah. But, yeah. So, I think it's more about mindset. I want my henchmen to be absolute psychos. That's when I believe that they're going to pose a real issue.
I think you can go numerous ways, but threat's definitely key. You want someone that poses a threat. You want someone that maybe gives Bond a moment of pause, as in, hold on, I can't really muck about with this person. They could do damage. And whether that's someone that's huge, like Hinks, for example, or someone like Red Grant, who's probably just as smart as Bond, but also quite as deadly. Whereas you've seen Daniel Craig with his shirt off. If he sees Elvis across the corridor, he's not going to pause. He's just going to think, well, I hate this guy. A minor distraction. But then when Oddjob walks into the room with that kind of smile on his face, Connery, who was a big guy and tough, Connery's going to be, okay, right, I need to really be on my A game to take this guy out. So I don't think they necessarily need to be the brains, because that's your kind of your mastermind boss. But I think the henchman needs to pose some level of obstacle. I kind of agree with what Rob was saying about Jaws, and that when I was young, I absolutely loved Jaws. But he's a bit of a buffoon. Roger doesn't really, you know, Roger comes into the room with him, and he does, like in Moonraker, when they meet in the cable cars and Roger sees him, he just kind of gives him the Roger nod and says, "Oh, how you doing?"
Beat your last time.
This guy's going to inconvenience me for 10 minutes, but you want someone that comes in and bond, think, God, right, I'm going to have to really, this is going to cause me a lot of problems. How am I going to get out of this? I'm going to have to get everything. If it's Connery, I'm going to have to ruffle my toupee. If it's Moore, I'm going to have to hurt a little bit. You want someone that's really going to cause problems and be a bit of a threat, so that when they appear on screen, it's like, oh, right, how does he get out of this? I mean, we're looking at I think the list you put together has picked many of the people that, like, when you first mentioned doing a henchman podcast, I put together my own list, and they're pretty much all on this. His name has just dropped out of my head, but from Living Daylights, someone remind me?
Oh, Necros.
Necros, yeah. Necros is one of my favourite henchmen for that reason. He causes problems for Bond, you know, whether he's got his exploding milk bottles or his Walkman or whatever, or fighting with Green Five in the kitchen. He's not someone that Dalton can just get rid of in 5 minutes.
No, and I love that, because what you were saying there, Stephen, is that Necros exactly fits that bill of, he's got the physical attributes to pose trouble, but the mental ones as well. Like, he's burning people's faces off. He's not going to stop. Yeah. You know, he's a horrible guy. So, yeah, he's right up there for me, Necros.
The problem is, annoyed I forgot his name.
No, well, we all do this, Stephen, don't worry. I think you've already shown you know quite a bit about Bond, so don't worry about that. But yeah, there's quite a lot of people who I don't know. You see, just going through it chronologically, in terms of Dr. No, there's lots of assassins and people bidding, of course, for Dr. No and Spectre. But I wouldn't say there's any real henchmen that are proper, like Bond must face this person in order to get by. I mean, like the three blind mice, of course, they're more assassins, I'd say.
The first one won't kill you. Not the second. Not even the third. Not till you crawl over here and you kiss my foot.
How about a cigarette?
Not a chance.
I'll pay for it.
What with?
50 gold sovereigns.
Where are they?
Up there in my case.
You show me.
Well, that cigarette.
Throw him down there. Any more in the other case?
I should imagine so. It's a standard kit. I'll have a look.
Put your hand back in your pockets. Keep them there.
When you come into From Russia with Love, though, the debate would be, is Donald Grant the best henchman, or is he even a henchman? Because like you say, we don't see him physically in Blofeld's room. We know he works, of course, for Blofeld, but he isn't. He's a hired assassin again, but he's a bit more of a henchman than, of course, Rosa Klebb or indeed Kronstein, because he is there as an expert in terms of what he can do. Would you guys describe him as a henchman? Mm.
Very interesting question, because then that makes me think of Necros in exactly the same way. Mm. Necros, I can't remember a scene where he and Koskov are in together. you know, or Joe Don Bennett, you know what I mean? Or is there one?
There's one at the swimming pool.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yes, yes. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but there is a hired element to Necros. Yeah. You know, you do get the impression he goes, you know, at the weekends he goes home and listens to his new romantic collection.
Yeah,
the best of Necros. Yeah.
Your Barry Manilow.
Yeah. Very good. If we are including him, I don't know. Oh, by the way, apologies to the Wizard of Ice on Twitter for incorrectly using his name in the books, Donovan, on a recent post. I apologise profusely for that. Yeah, so our friend John would have him down, would have Grant down as a henchman. Well, I mean, there is Morzini as well. That's not... He is perhaps a bit of a henchman. He poses absolutely zero threat to Bond on the boat. We did discuss this a bit on, of course, on the length in our From Bushy Love review that we've recently released. And he did come under a bit of stick for his useless attempts to kill Bond and Tatiana. We think he died. I don't know. I think he jumped into the Scottish waters where they filmed it in the end, I think. But yeah. Odd Job is the first proper, definitely a henchman in this definition, in the Sean Connery era and indeed the whole era.
Odd Job! Many people have tried to involve themselves in my affairs, unsuccessfully.
Remarkable. But what does the club secretary have to say?
Oh, nothing, Mr. Bond. I own the club.
So I was just going to say, I think that also is what defines a henchman, is recognisability in a casual audience.
Yes, absolutely.
If the casual audience will recognise him, like, obviously, us mega nerds will be delighting about, you know, I don't know, the Mishka and Grishkas for as long as we want.
Mishka.
But who I don't like, by the way.
We know.
Still maintain.
Famously don't like. Yeah.
Has it gone down in really 007?
In
I don't like.
Just, you mentioned Mishka and Grishka there. I've got a slightly funny story about them. Like you guys, growing up, I watched the Bond films on VHS just religiously. So I think when I was younger, I watched Octopussy roughly 7,000 times.
Yes.
But the dangers of watching these things from TV, which I will never do anymore, is the way that they're cut. So you're all familiar with the scene in Octopussy where Moore kills, I'm not sure what it's meant for Grishka, but you know, and that's for 009.
Yes.
One of my favourite Moore scenes of all time, right? I only saw that about a year ago. The version I had from TV, he opens the kind of little hut door, the twin falls to the ground, and then it just cut to a break.
Yes.
So I just thought, how did that twin die? He fell in a hut. That is rubbish.
Yeah. We had the same problem.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, I think all three of us were in the same boat. None of us, like, I definitely didn't know. It's a bit like Mario Van Peebles at the end of Jaws 4. Didn't know he survived.
I wanted him to die. Right. That was more effective.
So I feel like I've just ruined that for you as well, Steve. Yeah.
What? Jay!
He's alive! But yeah, it does. That actually, editing of TV rewrote Bond history in a lot of ways for a lot of people.
Outrageous, isn't it? The power they've got,
I see a lot of people watching Bond on TV and I just think, why? You're probably missing the best scenes or something cool has been cut.
I know,
That's what 009 is, one of Moore's coolest
movies. Yeah, it is.
It really is. And he's ice cold in that moment as well, isn't he? It's properly brittle.
People might have misunderstood him because of that. Who knows? As a Bond.
Possibly so. But you know, can you imagine, like, if you know, watching that in the cinema, thinking it was your Saturday, Sunday afternoon Bond and he's callously knifing Grishka in the guts. Oh dear, you know, because I'd not seen that at the time. I didn't know he was capable of that. I know that on ITV last night, the night before recording this, ITV4 had License to Kill on, didn't they?
ITV4?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I wonder how much they took out of that.
Yeah, well, I remember, I'm sure our version, you didn't see Milton Crest's head actually, you know, inflating. I'm sure there must have been some other things as well, because that's pretty violent, that film.
There was
Dario Gantry in that. like, oh, where did Dario go? He's just...
Oh, shit, is that what... Yeah. Oh, you saw, Stephen? Dario went on the gantry and that's it?
No, hopefully not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, but I do remember, like, seeing, when I finally saw that scene fully, like, seeing things I'd never seen before. Like, whoa. You know, like, way too much for me to accept.
Well, one of them was Hela.
To get my head around.
Hela, sort of impaled.
Hela, yeah.
And another was after Bond was sort of, I don't know, captured by the Japanese businessman and those agents. He sort of, there's another bit where the guy's wife, who seems, I don't know whether she's working for them as well, does a whole... amazing ninja session and takes on a few guards and then gets machine gunned down. One of them does. That was all cut. It was like a good minute cut. Yeah,
that's outrageous.
And Sanchez shoots the guys already dead.
Definitely wasn't
proper dark, that movie. Can we just, while we're on the topic of License Kill, can we just give a shout out to new listeners, long-time fans, Anthony Stark and Grandel Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Big fans of Really 007. Having recently spoken to the podcast on Twitter.
Yeah. You beauties.
You've made grown men very transcend. Happy.
Yeah, you really have.
Anyway, going back to Oddjob, as we've said, he's probably the archetypal henchman of the Bond series. So he's Goldfinger's personal bodyguard and chauffeur. So he does a bit on the side, more of an easier gig. He's played by the American wrestler, not Korean, Harold Sakata. He is obviously famous for his bowler hat, which is rimmed with a razor blade. For someone who barely speaks, what an amazing performance Sakata delivers in this film.
Yeah, it's the first iconic one, isn't it? Really, like transcendental, iconic henchman performance.
Yeah, he's the one that your mum or dad would know about if you said, what's a James Bond henchman? They would probably say Oddjob or Jaws, and... There's a reason for that. I love the way that he doesn't speak, but he says, now and then. Now that I'm a bit older and a bit more cynical and a bit more nitpicky, I mean, the hat thing is a bit silly and a bit inconsistent. It slices through a statue at the start. But it doesn't slice through as Tilly Masterson.
It just doesn't decapitate it.
Yeah.
It gets stuck in metal, so it is a bit inconsistent. But you know what? I don't really care. I don't think that's deeply about. Just a cool character, and his fight with Connery at the end is fantastic, because I don't know about you guys, but I love it when Bond is stuck and he has to use all the kind of means at his disposal, and he has to look around him and think, what can I use against him? And the way he fights against him is brilliant, especially because every time sort of Connery and Oddjob cross paths, Oddjob has this wonderful look in his face, this kind of smug smile of satisfaction, like, you're no match for me, I'm going to play with you for a minute and then throw you about. And definitely one of my favourites.
And it also, I think what's good, he has a musical cue. Which is quite scary. And also, a bit about what you were just saying, Stephen, like, he almost has like a warm, there's a warmth to him a little bit. Like, he smiles quite pleasantly at people. And I don't know, that's quite disturbing in some ways, because, you know, in some ways you're almost drawn to him.
Yeah.
When it comes to his the end fight with Connery, I really like that. And it's got the, it doesn't have any music apart from one bit. All it has is the soundtrack is the sort of ticking of the bomb. I think that's the noise that you just hear, like, boom, 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 boom. And then, suddenly, Bond realizes that he can get the hat, and they both realize that, and they like, you know, shuffle around a bit, and that's when Barry's music comes in, and you think that this is going to be that's how you're going to kill him. He takes the shot, and it, you know, it misses, and it sticks in the metal, and then the music cuts out again, and it's back to the ticking noise, and then that's when the electrocuting bit happens. It's brilliant.
And I think that's like brilliant filmmaking, building a character and giving a character extra, isn't it, in a way? I like all that. I mean, the performance, as you say, Tom, and lads as well, is just, it's great. It's that, with that smile, he's got that confidence that instills that doubt in you that, heck, I don't know whether Bond can take
it. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not sure Bond can take this guy. But also, because of that smile, he gives that warmth that I'd quite like to know his backstory. I'd like to know how we ended up. Was there a scene where, like, a 10-year-old Oddjob was given a hat by an elder member of the family, and, like, one day, son, you will make this family proud. I just, yeah, so for anything that can do that, that adds character, because character could be an additional thing to the henchman trope, possibly.
It makes it more memorable.
Possibly, if you find yourself thinking, how has this person got to where they are now?
Yeah.
That could be that extra gift of character by the filmmakers could be something that makes a good henchman what they are.
And of course, something I was mentioned before, you know, that blind loyalty, because even in Fort Knox at the end, you know, there's that other guy, I can't remember what the character
is. He's called Kish.
It looks like he's going to be... Right, okay. Well, it looks like he's going to be foiling the plan, or, you know, he wants out, and Oddjob's having none of it because he's blindly loyal to Goldfinger.
And that costs him, doesn't it?
That's fascinating, that.
Yeah.
I like when the cool bar bounces off his chest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so cool.
As though it's a fly or something like that.
That's a stake. It raises the stakes in a second, that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like, or flipping it. Yeah, we can't mess around here.
You were Mr. Universe in Scotland in the 60s, were you?
Yeah. Okay. He was a wrestler, wasn't he, I think, Harold Sakata, before this. So he was actually a proper, pretty hard bloke, as you can see. I feel sorry for him when he gets electrocuted. His face. Oh, dear, it's awful, isn't it? The pain.
Oh, yeah.
I
mean, but you say you feel sorry for him, but if you think back, so he knocks out Bond in his room. He's the one who then murders Jill Masterson, isn't he? He kills her, paints her gold, whatever. Yeah. Don't know whether he did the painting, but that's another story. And then, of course, as we said, he tries to decapitate Tilly. So he's a pretty awful guy. I think John mentioned it in the Octopussy episode that clearly we'll talk about Gobinda as we get on, but the end of the golf game was alluded to with the dice, wasn't it? That's a sort of, again, his loyalty, that he's so annoyed that Bond has outwitted Goldfinger in the game where he's acting as caddy. He's like, that annoyed me so much. I'm going to crush this to show you I've still got the upper hand almost, and that I'm formidable and you'll encounter me later.
Yeah, I find that relationship, though, that suggestion that they've got something on him. You know, like, so Goldfinger's got something on Oddjob that makes him want to be completely loyal to the point of, well, beyond reason. Really fascinating. And again, for me, it imbues that sense of sympathy, like you were saying, Tom. I feel sad that, you know, someone has, like, it's a bit like Stockholm Syndrome, isn't it? You know, like you're just so close to someone that you fall completely infatuated with them, that you do anything for.
Besotted.
You're besotted. And it just gets mad, you know. So that puts like a different lens on all these henchmen for me, in a way. You know, if you think of it through that, I'm looking into this way too far.
No.
See if anyone thought that, you know, like there was a, you know, like that Stamper was, you know, Jonathan Price's hostage for so long. But like, here you are, Stamper. Eat protein until you're massive, and then then you'll be mine forever.
You say that, but I remember one year thinking, I wonder if Oddjob had three hats. So he had a sharper one for the statue, and then it needed a bit of sharpening before. Then he sharpened it again by the time he got to the bank, so it could go through the bars. And I'm thinking, you're just... Stop.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's very true, yeah. And did he use his dull hat for the Jill Masterson moment as well? You know, like,
So he does have a bit of tenderness, clearly.
Yeah. Is there a Mrs. Oddjob?
A Mrs. Job.
Yeah.
Mrs. Job, yeah.
I nearly said something
comes
very
in,
rude.
Puts the steel hat on her thing.
Yeah.
I think there are a few pointers which show what an impact Oddjob has had as a henchman, and, you know, as part of Bond folklore that, you know, like you say, Stephen, that your average non-Bond fan would know. And I think one of them is Austin Powers, and that's
Austin Powerovich.
Random task, who throws a shoe rather than a hat. I think that, like, that shows that, you know, he's had some sort of yeah. And also including him in the game GoldenEye. I don't think you know, in the multiplayer function, and, you know, there are other characters who we'll discuss who are also in that. But I just think that shows this guy is a big deal when it comes to the Bond canon.
He is, yeah.
He's a finalist, definitely. I think
is it a tournament this?
Well, who knows? It can be, Ross.
I like the idea that, you know, I know a few who won't be there.
Oh, heck, I'm looking forward to that.
Well,
Thunderball is another funny one because...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I think it was mentioned to you, Fiona Volpe, brilliant character, far more effective than the actual henchman who is possibly Vargas. I mean, it's just, so I don't really think Vargas is going to be a finalist, as it were, in any of this. All we know is he has no lovers, and he's absolutely no threat either, has he? He's a pretty...
Yeah, that's about the only scene when you think of Vargas is that one scene, you know, Vargas does not drink,
yeah.
Vargas does not smoke. What do you do? That's all he really brings to the film. He isn't even saying
that. No. Oh, you're right. Boring, Varga.
Yeah. Nice death, though. Nice.
He's oh, yeah. I think Volpe's amazing.
She's amazing.
Oh, yes. Thunderball would have been a different film if Vargas got out of the bath and Connery offered him a beer. That would have been a different film.
Yeah, it would be. The Vargas tape.
Can I have a lift?
Sure.
Thank you. You've just about saved my life.
Really?
My outboard capsized, so I had to swim ashore. How far do you go?
You better fasten your safety belt. What's your name?
James Bond.
Fiona Volpe.
Here often?
Do I make you nervous?
No, it's just that I have no desire to be capsized twice in one night.
Well, at least you won't have to swim ashore. Have you been here before, Mr. Bond?
No, I haven't. But this is the road to NASA.
Yes. Eventually.
Yes, me too. This is my hotel.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, it's so convenient.
You look pale, Mr. Bond. I hope I didn't frighten you.
Well, you see, I've always been a nervous passenger.
Some men just don't like to be driven.
No, some men just don't like to be taken for a ride.
Is she a henchman?
Henchwoman?
Volpe. I think so, because I think she's... I find her fascinating. Because for a start, I think she's a brilliant character. Really great character.
Yeah.
Really tormented in so many ways, quite vulnerable in other ways as well.
Yeah.
Brilliantly acted. Goes without saying she absolutely looks the part as well. Yeah, it's super. I think she's the main hench threat in that film.
She's absolutely amazing. She is probably even more memorable than Largo. No offense, Largo. Her character has more to do in individual scenes, doesn't she? Like that whole the bedroom and the bath scene. And even the way she dies is absolutely brilliantly directed and superbly performed. I think it's superb.
If I can jump in, sorry, Tom. I found, you know, as a young man growing up, like the sexual chemistry and the interplay between Connery and Bond and Volpe in these scenes, so unbelievable to try and get my head around. The fact that they actively wanted to kill each other, but they were in a hotel room together getting ready for a night out. That kind of stuff, you know? Like, that kind of dynamic, I just couldn't not possibly get my head around. And it was so grown up and out there for me growing up that in a lot of ways, that probably elevates both Thunderball and Volpe as a character in my mind in terms of my feelings on the whole franchise, possibly.
Don't disagree, Rob. I think in terms of chemistry, I think we mentioned the chemistry, particularly between in Octopussy, Bond and Octopussy, is one of the series highlights. Craig and Eva Green. Yet we're now meant to be thinking that the main chemistry in the whole series is Bond and Madeleine Swann, which is nowhere near the chemistry of Connery and Volpe, is it, at all?
I always wondered about Fiona Volpe, whether they were trying to pull a sort of bait and switch on the audience, because in Goldfinger, Connery sleeps with Honor Blackman, and it's meant to be kind of, she was evil and she was in on the plan, now she slept with him, she's having second thoughts. But with Fiona Volpe, it's like, well, we slept together, but so what? I'm still going to do what?
Very interesting.
Do,
you know? I
agree totally, but I also think as well that the fact that they don't let it pan out that way is brilliant from the filmmakers. It makes him, you know, that whole Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, it just, that seals the myth straight away that, you know, like, oh, he's so dangerous, this fella, like, literally. Although her death is hilarious. I just love it. I didn't realise I loved it that much until we got started talking about it. Like so many things in the Bond world, you don't realise how much you love it until you actually get to talk about it.
Because she doesn't want to actually kill him herself. She obviously gets the other assassin to do it for her while she's distracting Bond by dancing with him and doing it in broad daylight. So it adds another dimension of the power play between them. And she is. I mean, to talk about, they didn't used to be strong female characters in those days. Goodness me. I mean, she's far more... Again, I don't want to keep slagging off the recent films, but compare that to Monica Bellucci's character. It's just... I know she's not a villain.
It's not Bellucci's fault. But yeah, it's so true.
After Thunderball, we get to You Only Live Twice. Now, we do have one of the sort of stereotypical henchmen here in Hans, but
I'm going to be fighting Hans's corner here. Tom.
Good. Okay. Well, Matthew, you lead the way. He is a henchman. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I'm worried here, Matt. Sorry. So sorry, because I can't even remember.
I'm going to be a bit, it's just tongue in cheek, really. He just suddenly appears and there's not much made of him. He's there with Blofeld in the lair at the end. Can you not remember? He's pretty tall, pretty stacked, blonde hair, like a black onesie.
like if Kriegler and
Brandt
had a baby.
What a beautiful baby it would be, and it was, yeah. But obviously the fact that he's Blofeld's henchman and the fact that Blofeld only appears in the final act of that film means that we haven't seen him do anything before and show any kind of threat. He doesn't have any special skill. I don't think he doesn't have any lines. It's just a bit of a token henchman. I don't think he doesn't kill anyone. I do quite like the fight that him and Bond have, and I like the way that Bond disposes of him. Can you remember, Rob, at all? You a bit...
Literally on YouTube right now. Trying to
Yeah, no, that's fine.
I remind myself of this.
Pretty embarrassing that I don't know. It lasts 1 minute and 16 seconds. No, it doesn't. No, it actually only starts at 22 seconds. This is good. I remember this.
The storm.
And he's proper hound as well.
Yeah, he is.
It's super, yeah. He's got a lamp and he's absolutely wailing on Connery. And they're slipping everywhere. It's like a fight that we used to do in the old James Bond. And gins him into the Ingledunk fireplace, big right hand. All around the net, two double body shots. Don't worry, lads, we've only got 10 seconds left. Nicks the key, starts sprinting. Bond is using his wits. He's got his leg, it's a UFC move. Ah, it's a twist, he's got the upper hand. They're going across the lift. No, they left the bridge. They're going up. Big right hand. And then it's the big back body drop into the massive field. Got it, thank you so much.
I'm not saying he's any good.
Bon appetit.
I've got a bit of a soft spot for that fight in that it's a bit of a babyish, you know, one of the more babyish sets of, you know, a pool of piranhas and everything and a big fireplace yeah. and everything. I quite like that fight and everything. But he's not a brilliant henchman.
But I like that. It proves that it's something for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe he would have got more time had Blofeld been involved in the film more. I suppose you could maybe make a slight argument for the Rock's granddad as a henchman in You Only Live Twice. He's the big dude that fights him with a couch.
Oh, that's so good.
In the office.
That's one of the best fights in the whole series.
Did you say that's the Rock's granddad?
I'm pretty sure it is, or the Rock's father, the Rock's granddad. Siamese vodka, just before that scene.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a terrific scene, isn't it?
Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. It's the Rock's grandfather appeared in the 1967 James Bond film, You Only Live Twice, portrayed by Samoan-American wrestler Peter Fanen Maivia, who is also the grandfather of Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh, just
picks up a coach.
As you, like you do, as Dad would say, yeah. But anyone else from You Only Live Twice, not really a henchman. There's a few, obviously.
There's a Fiona Volpe.
Beautiful Ginger. Yeah.
Her relationship with Bond is bizarre because I think if you wanted to be nitpicky with Bond, you could say that there are a million characters that have him dead to rights, could kill him, but don't. But for me, hers is the standard annoying one. She has him tied up. She's got orders to kill him, but she puts him on a plane, just the two of them, ejects a small wooden plank out, with a small explosive device in the plane, then parachutes. That must be the most convoluted way of killing a character.
When she had inside her, she had that little knife, you know, it could have been done.
I've got you now.
When she gets back to the piranhas later on, I'm thinking, well, you sort of deserve that. You know, you had the opportunity.
Asato isn't a henchman, is he, at all? So I think it's definitely Hans, but he probably won't get in the final, I'm afraid, Hans. I'm sorry. So we're going to have to move on to Honor Majesty's Secret Service. Sorry. Technically, Gunther is the henchman, isn't he? I suppose I think he's Blofeld's head of security. The reason I probably wouldn't put him in the final myself, even though he is he's a goon and he is a real physical presence and he's always loyal to Blofeld. He doesn't actually have a fight with Bond because I think it's Tracy who kills him by impaling him to a wall. That's the reason I'd rule him out. You could argue Irma Bunt is more of a henchwoman. Because she's the one who kills Tracy. And she's pretty scary, isn't she? Really scary.
Yeah, that shot of her when he goes into the bedroom, that is the most terrifying shot in cinema.
Yeah. You know, it's so underrated, her place in cinema. Irma Bunt is the woman that killed James Bond.
Yeah. It's a bit underrated.
Blofeld always gets the credit.
There's no rating for that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that. No one, I don't think, you know, does anyone these days ever talk? Do kids in school ever talk about that?
No. Talking about Madeline Swan.
No, we did. James Bond is no longer aspirational.
You Only Live Twice. Bond dies. Yeah, very apt.
Yeah.
We're going to have to move on to Diamonds Are Forever, and we get another big debate, don't we?
Yeah.
Winston Kidd, the elephant in the room. Are they assassins or are they henchmen?
What's the matter with him?
It's my wisdom teeth. I haven't had him out yet.
Would you mind having a look, doctor?
Of course. I'm not going to hurt you. Just open. No. Open wide.
Ha! Ha! Curious. How everyone who touches those diamonds seems to die.
Stop right there. Who are you?
Dr. Tynan sent us.
Why didn't he come himself?
He was taken sick. Bitten by the bug. He sent this for you.
God had wanted man to fly.
He would have given him wings, Mr. Kidd.
What I was going to say about these two, because I know Chris was wanting these two to be included in this debate. You never see them in the same room as Blofeld, do you? Is there any interaction between them? Right. And I find that quite scary, actually. I find it really scary that they're just, wherever they are, it's to kill someone. And like in different ways. And I find them pretty scary. Again, they've got a musical cue of their own. Whether I'd class them as henchmen. Exactly, yeah. I find them really scary. Like I say, henchmen or not, I don't know. I'm willing to hear debate on this, and we'll reserve judgment.
That's what this is for, Matthew.
I'm going to say yes. For me, they are henchmen. I'm going for it. I'm going to say they are, because they're very single-minded in their objectives, aren't they? In the fatalities they're trying to induce. But also, I like that. I know that I'm probably breaking my own rules because it wasn't longer. I'm saying, but we've never seen with the main villain. Yeah. Like you say, in this instance, I really like that, actually, that distance. And I think it comes from the performance of Winton Kidd, the gentleman playing Winton Kidd, who are Putter Smith and Bruce Glover. I really, really like what they did here, and I would accredit them rather than anything else. But I would say that, though, they get a really hard ride in casual fandom, Winton Kidd. The steel toe caps are putting more than once on them in like a critical sense. But I think they're an interesting flavour. I think they're streets ahead of Bambi and Thumper.
Yes, because those are the other two. You could say they're henchmen, couldn't you? But they actually start off quite effective, don't they? They seem to be causing Bond problems. But then about a minute later...
Well, I think possibly...
That's it. And then they don't seem bothered. They just want to get out of the pool, and they're not really bothered about continuing.
No, I think that could be another criteria we have to add to the Bond, the hench person tick list, is that are you crap or are you not crap? Yeah. If you are crap, then you are not the hench.
You can't do your one job.
Odd job, yeah.
Odd job.
Yeah.
Stephen, because if we include Winton Kidd as henchmen, then goodness me, they must be really almost at the top of the list, do you think?
I really like both of them, and I can see why they would get a hard time as being, in inverted commas, problematic for the last moment where Bond puts hands between the legs and he goes, really sort of dodgy moment. But if you take that away, they're kind of one of the many characters or occurrences in the Bond film that's weirdly progressive for their time, because they're not gay assassins. They're just assassins who happen to be gay. And they're very, very good at their job. They kill almost everyone that they come into contact with early on. I'm not too sure about the final scene. They don't seem to pose a huge amount of threat to Connery when he actually goes down to it. But in terms of the film, they do have a big impact on the film. They're not just kind of this rubbish blonde muscly dude who's hanging about in the background. They're actually causing a lot of impact.
Sorry.
Yeah, I do rate them, and but then I'm a Diamonds Defender, so.
Ooh, I like that expression. Is that an official term, Diamonds Defender?
Well, I mean, you look at all these lists of Bond films ranked and rated, and Diamonds is always near the bottom. Yeah. And I can absolutely see why. It's a tired film. The plot makes no sense, and you just killed James Bond. Sorry, how did you Bond? You're on a diamond dealer for an amphibian. So it is quite rough, but at the same time, it's got that slinky Barry score the cool scene when the car goes up on two wheels. And I mean, Connery's so far from the sort of 60s sex panther that he was, but still Connery, still quite cool.
Deeply watchable. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's wigged about as tall as the White House, but still Connery in a White House. So I mean, I'm a Diamonds Defender, and I think Winton and Kidd are quite, I think they're quite an enjoyable part of the film, whether that's down to my Barry bias. So every time I see them, I hear his music, and I think, ooh, quite like this. Who knows?
Yeah, we are going to actually do our Diamonds Are Forever review fairly soon, and we do have License to Queer hopefully joining us for that. And I know they and I, and hopefully the other people on board, will be massively defending that film. Because there are people I know who are a little bit almost intimidated by it. There's a few scary bits in it. There's a few odd moments in it. But I'm gonna be defending it on this review.
Hi, I'm Rob.
I'm Simon.
And I'm James.
We want to talk about those movies, those supposedly bad movies, those movies that bombed.
to see if they weren't that bad after all. Join us every week on the For Your Reconsideration podcast, part of the Flickering Myth podcast network.
You can catch us on iTunes, on Spotify, and all the usual streaming apps.
And it won't cost you a solitary bean, mate.
It's like it's free.
It's just like it's free.
So we go into the Roger Moore era. Go for it.
Jill St. John. I'll just say that, sorry.
Jill St. John. Yeah. I know you're a big fan.
Jill St. John.
Jill St. John.
Jill Stark of the London Financial Times.
Yes, Roger Moore. His era, of course, was, goodness me, it's pretty packed. There's lots to discuss here. And the first one, of course, is Live and Let Die. And I think Teehee definitely qualifies in every single way. So I'm going to put him straight into the final.
That's an alligator. You can always tell by its brown nose. There's old Albert. And he's a croc. Got over careless with him some time back, and he took my whole arm off.
Well done, Albert.
They'll eat anything, even each other. Then again, sometime they can go a whole year without eating.
Oh, I was rather counting on that.
There are two ways to disable a crocodile, you know.
I don't suppose you care to share that information with me?
Well, one way is to take a pencil and jam it in the depression hole behind his eye.
And the other?
Oh, the other's twice as simple. You just put your hand in his mouth and pull his teeth out.
Again, nitpicky, you look at the arm and it's obviously fake. It's way too long.
Oh, no.
It's cool, though. Like many Bond fans who've watched the films too many times, I like these little odd noises that you hear in Bond films, like the twang when Bond skis through the bunting on For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
Or the sucking cup when they take off the Connery mask at the start of From Russia With Love. I love the ping noise when Moore cuts the little cord in Teehee's arm. I mean, we all know that every train fight in a Bond film is good.
Yeah.
Every train fight is pretty good. I quite like the fight with Teehee on the train. Not to repeat myself, but I like it because he uses all the things around him, a pack of cards, a tray, a small ladder. That said, it slightly reminds me of the toilet fight from Naked Gun 2.5 with Rebin and just a little bit.
the hand drive. Absolutely brilliant.
Despite what I've said, though, I do like Teehee. He, in some ways, he's a sort of stereotypical villain. He's big, he's imposing, he's a threat. He's a lot chattier, though, than Oddjob. He's quite happy to chat away and tell Bond about how you kill a crocodile and, you know, you take its teeth out. And at that stage, it might have been like a sort of nice change. You know, we can't keep doing the same thing. We can't just do another Oddjob. We've got this guy, he's got a gimmick with the arm. He's a threat. He's big. You know, he wears his nice red suit jacket. But he's also quite chatty. He's memorable anyway. He sticks in the memory. You think of the villain from Live and Let Die. You think of Baron Samedi, but you mainly think of Teehee.
Did he make GoldenEye again?
I don't think so. Baron Samedi did.
He's not a henchman, is he, Baron Samedi? He's a brilliant character.
I don't know what he is.
He's just an independent.
Can I add another criteria then?
Yeah.
If we think another criteria to the Bond henchman, what makes them a henchman thing is that the fact that they are following the motives of somebody else, because I feel like Baron Samedi's following his own motives.
Yeah.
He's got his own designs, he's got his own end game. That probably, because that, I think there are still, though, because up to just now, I thought there were two henchmen in this film. I think that's still two. Discounting Baron Samedi. Exactly. Whisper is the henchman.
You call me?
Whisper. Do you I can't, honestly, the amount of wonderful intimate moments with my wife I've ruined by doing that.
You're shamming.
You're shamming.
He doesn't even, Bob didn't even kill him. He's like, oh, you go in there, I'll just leave you. I'm not gonna try and kill you. He just kills him. Oh, doesn't he? He's the one who uses that weird sort of gun when he drives past the chap that killed Charlie. The chap in the car. So he's not, you know, he's not the nicest.
Yeah, the dart thing.
Charlie. Yeah.
So good.
But he was off. Was he going for Bond? He was going for the driver, wasn't he?
Yeah. Kill both.
I think he was, because I think the assumption was he would then, you know, careen in someone else. Kill Bond!
Kill Bond!
He would kill both. No. So kill both! Yes. Smash someone else up. I've got no doubt in my mind that Teehee, though, would have no trouble in stripping the flesh from your bones with that hook.
Yeah.
No, he'd love it. He'd have no problem. And again, that's that mental light up. Yeah, he's serious.
Well, the scene where he...
Very smart. Great smile.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He threatens torture. He's torturing Bond. He doesn't quite get onto it, does it? But he threatens to snap off Bond's fingers and more vital organs. When Big is, that's a great scene, isn't it? When did you touch that? That's that scene. And
such a great scene.
But then we, in terms of like the Crocodile Farm scene, I mean, it's brilliant. The music's brilliant. And you know, these sort of scenes are good. A bit like we mentioned with You Only Live Twice, that the sort of they can be spoofed by Austin Powers or whoever, because let's leave, instead of just killing Bond, let's leave him in a situation where he's got very little chance of escape, but we will give him that chance. And hopefully he'll have a horrible death if he doesn't, whatever.
If only he'd stuck around to watch, you know, just taking the time, just watch the...
Seriously, I think Teehee's the kind of guy that would have enjoyed it, like, oh, well done.
Yeah, he would.
Marvellous.
Well, he didn't bother going back to Saint Monique, did he? I don't think he's there. He just waits. He just hides in the train. That's when we see him at the end. It's almost, it's a great way, you think. You might be thinking, hang on, I forgot about him. And then, oh, yeah, there's Teehee, yeah. And then you see that the shot of him. I mean, I don't know why you couldn't just...
That's just a bit like Winston Kidd, because they've been just a bit separate from that final thing, and Winston Kidd is separate in general. I like that there's still, you know, after the big final act, as it were, it's almost like a coda or a, whatever you call it, you know, at the end, when you think everything's safe, there's still that one person or couple of people to... and that often is the henchman's role in a Bond film. That often happens, that they, in fact... have a confrontation after the main villain has been disposed of. Stamper. Sorry.
I love how Stamper's growing in prominence.
Yeah, he is. Hey, Stamper. Hey, Stamper.
Mr. Stamper.
Good evening. If you're enjoying Really 007 Pod, why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram? Look us up at Really 007 Pod.
I mean, Man with the Golden Gun, yeah, there's not really a proper henchman, I'd argue. There's Nick Knack, who's almost a manservant, who's the brains behind the operation. You can't really say he's a physical threat, really, no offence. There's that chap who is in the sort of chemical lab who almost becomes a henchman, but he's outwitted by Goodnight, who... Goodnight, are you still there? I mean, I don't know whether that qualifies you as a very good henchman, so I don't think we can have him. Do you think Nick Knack can rule him out, Rob? Do you think?
I don't think. It's funny
with
because
that, he's about to kill him with that pitchfork. You know, when he's dressed up as the. But
yes.
Oh yes, yeah. I suppose that must mean that he is. I think the threat of physical harm is there. He's a really fun character, isn't he?
He's brilliant.
While I was researching. You know, the best henchman in the Bond franchise, or whatever the expression is. One listed in there was Sheriff J.W. Pepper.
What?
And the reason that this particular website had included it was like he tried his best to ruin two James Bond
films. This is
the kind of thing that the Bond world is up against, isn't it? You know, so I definitely think that in. Which is the better, you know, if I think in those terms, which is the better one? Villachez or J.W. Pepper? Well, it's Villachez. So, yeah, Villachez is a henchman in my book.
I can see arguments from manservant and henchman, but with Man with the Golden Gun, there's almost no room for a henchman because Lee is so big and he...
Yeah.
...the film, and he's so much threat for one film that it's almost as if Nick Knack doesn't need to pose a threat because Christopher Lee's over there with his... talking about his elephants and his trick shots and... his third nipple, and I don't know if you need sometimes you don't always need a henchman with the really rubbish villains that don't pose any physical threat. You definitely need a Jaws or an Odd Job. You need someone that can actually fight one. And because Lee is such an equal, you don't necessarily need a big muscly blonde dude who's going to come in and give him a fight and I must give you an unpleasant death.
that's one of the complaints.
Well, love this theme that's emerging.
There's so many complaints about Quantum of Solace, but a new complaint, if you were, is that the main villain, Dominic Green, is absolutely no physical threat, and then his hench person isn't either. So are we really that scared of anybody in that film? Not really, I'd say.
Well,
the editor.
Yeah,
I don't think there's nothing to be scared of in that film apart from the film itself.
Probably along with Oddjob, the most famous henchman in the entire Bond series, it's Jaws.
I might have guessed.
Do you know him?
Not socially. His name's Jaws. He kills people.
Now, John, of course, mentioned, I think, last time round that, he was obviously a reaction to the film Jaws, and there is the link with the shark, isn't there, at the end, that he kills a shark amazingly with his teeth. But clearly, there's a lot more to him than that. He's a real physical threat. He's extremely tall, of course. He's got these teeth. Now, it's a world away, isn't it, from the low-key, the Sean Connery days we were talking about earlier, Stephen, isn't it? But he is a proper archetypal henchman. He's almost, though, because I think, Rob, the reason you don't maybe see him as much of a threat as he is because you've grown up with the two films and you know that he becomes good.
Yes.
And he's actually not as much effect, is he, really, in Moonraker, even. So
you're right.
The early
if I'm scenes, thinking of, yeah, you're right, Tom.
The early scenes in The Spy Loved Me, goodness me, where he, it's terrifying. It's children watching that when he's basically, he tries to, he completes his missions as well, doesn't he? He kills Fekish and then he bites Max Calvert to death. The shots of Calvert, the terror, are awful. And even in...
Oh, yeah, I love all that stuff.
In Moonraker, to be fair, is it Manuela? He doesn't quite get to her, but that's really scary. But we'll get on to the clown fit.
The big clown head on. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think so much was undone for me in the sort of like the fear factor of Jaws with... Here's to us.
Yeah.
Most likely. But no, like, whoa, he's such a gorgeous baritone.
Yeah.
Absolutely lovely.
Nice guy.
but like, quite rightly, though, I mean, like, I think the fact that he's there is one of the reasons that Spy Who Loved Me is, in a lot of purist minds, I think, is like a pure Bond movie in a lot of ways, isn't it? It's got all the tick boxes ticked, so to speak. So, and one of them is the iconic henchman, and there you go, you got it, you got the guy.
And I think if you had family fortunes and you had the most memorable henchman, I'm sure he would be the top, either him or Odd Job.
There
is a reason for that. The older and the grumpier I get, I think he's a missed opportunity. I think he's really, really brilliant and effective in some scenes, like as you're talking about the pyramids, when there's the neon light behind him and when he stops.
Yeah.
Great scene when he kills Matt Caban, which leads to one of the best visual gags in the series when we're pushed out of order sign on.
Yes, yes.
He's really good, and the train fight, I think, again, is good. I just wish they hadn't used... So they almost dilute the impact of him with too many comic moments, like him swiping down all the rubble and the building site with the big pole, and then when he drops the brick on his foot.
Yeah.
When he sort of jumps out on Anya on the train, the first time you see that, you think, oh, scary moment. But then you think, how long has he been in there?
Yes,
he's a character who's really good and he's really memorable and he had some brilliant scenes. But when I rewatch Spy, I just think he could have been better had they removed these two or three moments that just make him a bit of a buffoon.
A little bit, yeah.
Because by the time you get to the end in Spy Who Loved Me, when, as we were talking about earlier, Moore does the look at the magnet, like, you know, oh, look, what's behind you? At that stage, you're not terrified for Moore. You're just thinking, how's he going to get rid of him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's extremely funny.
Yeah, it's like that.
It's much more like getting rid of a villain. And that, okay, it does. I agree, it does dilute the scariness of Jaws, but it's a brilliant moment. The acting for Gore is so good, isn't it?
Oh, no.
I love Timothy Not Dalton, but I cannot imagine Dalton looking at that magnet in the scene.
I'd like to see him try. I'd love to watch him have a go.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
what do you think of Jaws?
It's amazing that they were able to create this character who is so iconic and has, you know, as we've said, had a big impact. Yeah, and as you've also said, early on in Spy Love, he's first introduced at the same time as another henchman, Xandor. But it's made clear by Stromberg that Jaws is in charge. Xandor reports to Jaws. But yeah, so those early scenes, as we say, they're absolutely terrifying. And it is almost like he's some sort of villain from a horror film. And the way he kills those people and in, you know, the way they're shot and everything, it's terrifying. And I was really scared. There was a time when I was scared of getting up to the train fight. I don't know why I found that the scariest, but I found it really scary, him just appearing there when I was a kid. And so for a long time, I didn't often get past that and watch. I'd stop it up to there and not, you know, get onto the incredible finale and everything. Yeah, I think he's brilliant. I agree, he's a bit of a missed opportunity. And obviously by the end of Moonraker, it's becoming a bit of a farce. Interesting that on the game in GoldenEye, he's wearing his outfit from Moonraker, I think. You know, the white shirt with the braces and the
iconic Jaws, not the blue suit, you know, the sports jacket. Moonraker is a bit different because whereas we had Xandor as the other sort of henchman, we do have Chang. He's pretty much Drax's actual henchman, isn't he? He only hires Jaws as like an assassin or a private guy to kill him. Whereas he was employed by Stromberg, it's almost like Drax watched The Spy Who Loved Me and thought, oh, he's quite handy, and my Osman or something. Because he's in the intro, isn't he? He's in the intro when he chucks Bond out of the plane. But yeah, Chang as well. But before we talk about Chang, Stephen, had you had anything more to say about Jaws?
Jaws and Moonraker. I think a lot of people understandably say that Jaws is better in The Spy Who Loved Me. But my favourite Jaws scene has always been the one in the carnival where he's in the big clown costume and he's walking along the alley.
That's terrifying.
It's so creepy and unsettling. I know that Moonraker is a deeply silly film in many ways, not just because of the double-taken pigeon. It also has some of the darkest scenes in...
Yeah.
The one in the forest where Corinne is hunted down by...
Oh, dear, yeah.
That's awful.
But that Jaws scene in the alleyway is so creepy and unnerving. So it just blows my mind that you've got that in the same film as when Roger Moore kicks him in the balls and it looks like he's got steel balls. What is that?
Yeah.
Dolly, I've got bad news for you.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
It's such an odd moment when Moore kicks him and that noise comes in. So what, is all of them made of metal? Balls?
Imagine him, you know, going to his first appointment like, right, I want metal teeth and metal knackers. Can this be done? Can we do this?
Slightly different way of becoming a robot than in Terminator, maybe.
I do love the scene when Drax calls, though. Oh, yes, well, if you can get him, of course. I love that.
Yeah, that is good. That's a way of setting up a character, isn't it, without the character even being there. Yeah. Gives the, you know, I love the idea that, you know, like he was like, we can get that fella who was fooled by a magnet in the first one.
Yeah.
Oh, if you can get him, great.
There's lots of serious bits in Moonraker, aren't there? And Chang, who I was going to mention, he's the one who's controlling the, what do you call it? The thing that's going, I've forgotten, I've gone blank. The centrifuge.
Yes.
The thing that's going round and round, another really effective, serious scene.
Yeah.
And Chang, he does get a bit of a fight. We get that sort of fight with all the glassware going getting smashed to pieces, some babyish sort of Chinese kung fu or whatever, and then he gets chucked out of the window. he's quite funny. His hair is sublime or ridiculous in whichever mood you're in. But he's I don't think you can quite take him seriously as a henchman. the look of, he almost looks heartbroken when the centrifuge power stops.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, such sad eyes. Yeah.
So yeah, Wilson's taekwondo instructor. Is that right?
Is that true? Oh.
I read that Michael G. Wilson was learning taekwondo and that was his instructor. And again, don't quote me.
Going on then to For Your Eyes Only, we've definitely got a henchman here. We've mentioned him before. We've got Eric Kriegler. We're sort of introduced to him as a Winter Olympic guy, aren't we, really? It's one of the more unusual introductions to a character. Someone who is spurning
people's
advances. Yeah. John Wyman. Get him on the show, John. But he was working for Christatos, of course. Possibly, I don't know, we didn't really know where his allegiance was, because he may have been more to do with the whole the East Germany and the Soviets and that kind of thing. But yeah, he's tall, he's physically imposing, he's blonde, which seems to help with a lot of these guys. Yeah. He's like yours, he didn't really speak. Grunts, doesn't he? Grunts his way through. Some of, again, like you were talking about, some of the lovely sound effects in the Bond series. The way his weird gun that is used for shooting on the court, the noise.
Yes.
It's a bit like Teehee's wire being snapped, isn't it? But then his grunts as well when he's going down the track and he's getting annoyed, and then he chucks his motorbike. And the Conti music, it's all absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, Runaway is just such a fantastic
movie. It is,
yeah.
Kriegler's a funny one for me. I mean, I don't think you could have someone like Jaws or Oddjob in For Your Eyes Only, because it is a sort of pared down, slightly more realistic, in inverted commas, a realistic film. He's not especially memorable when you say, who's the henchman from For Your Eyes Only? You do have to pause for a second and think, yeah, it was Kriegler, whereas Oddjob comes to mind instantly. Yeah. I mean, I quite like him. I'm slightly puzzled by his behaviour in Cortina, because he's a famous athlete, yet he's openly shooting Bond and chasing Bond and tossing up Bond. Yeah.
Shooting in front of him. He didn't make it up.
Yeah, there's absolutely no sort of decision made by him to sort of be sly. He's just quite happy to kill Moore in his ever-growing hair. But I suppose you do need someone in that film, like we were talking earlier, when your main villain, like Christatos, doesn't really pose a physical threat, you need the henchman to do that, and Kriegler is definitely tough enough to take on Moore at that stage.
Oh, he looks cracking in Lycra as well. But at the end, doesn't he get outdone by gravity? I mean, he's holding a massive thing over his head, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite a stupid way to go.
Yeah, yeah, he's holding that big stone, like plant pot or whatever it is.
Yeah, it is. And, that's what sticks in my head.
And he's about to chuck it, and then he gets distracted by both a helicopter arriving and Christatos, you know, walking out the door, which is quite strange. And Bond takes that black thing pushes him out the window and falls to his death. And it's lovely how graceful his fall is, like his legs. Together, but he's an Olympian, so he's got some extra points
at the bottom, like 10 10 with cards.
I have a minor theory that I'd like to run past you guys. Sometimes I think it's best, or maybe not sometimes, usually I think it's best if you save the main threat till last. So, for example, Spy Who Loved Me, the main threat in that film is Jaws over Stromberg. So,
really?
Jaws, you know, fight. As much as I love For Your Eyes Only, and I do, one of my favourite Moores, I wonder if the film would have been better if he killed Christatos first and then Kriegler was like the final showdown. Yeah. Because the minute Hugo's dealt with, I mean, he's not going to have much trouble with Christatos.
They're queuing up to kill him, and it's Bond who's actually saying, he says to Melina, don't, basically, doesn't he? But it's Glumbo who kills him.
Yeah. Oh, what a mustache.
There's no threat from Christatos, is there? No, I mean, like, no, he is a desk weasel who has been self-promoted to the point of, yeah, no, I fancy this now. But let's get me an Olympian on the line and we'll go with it. Brilliant lair, though. Great lair.
Good, yeah. Yeah.
Baddies, you know, great lair. You know, we're not talking about Fear Eyes Only as a film, but the climbing sequence beforehand is so good that it gives electric intensity to Kriegler and Christatos from that point.
Yeah.
There was a guy I used to work with who was a mountain climber, and we were talking about For Your Eyes Only one day. Apparently, the shoelace thing is something that climbers actually do, because when I was a kid, I just thought, ridiculous. He saves himself with laser. Apparently, that is something that real climbers can do.
Incredible.
Amazing.
Jaw-dropping moment, though. I mean, I think if you look at the Bond franchise as a whole, there's maybe sort of, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 moments that are heart-stopping. And the moment when Moore is kicked off the mountain, well, it's not Moore, but the stunt. That's a genuine heart-stopping. I'd love to see that scene in IMAX.
The silence as he's falling as well. You know, the ropes, you just hear the noise like... It's so... I'd love to have seen that in the cinema.
The noise of the guy falling and you sort of... before and... His face so awful when he's it's not PG, is it?
And again, Paul's doing his customary brilliant noise, it's like,
The other gorgeous sort of secondary villain, of course, in the film, is Locke, isn't it? He's not really a henchman, though, is he? His henchman is Charles Dance, isn't it, really?
Oh, yes, love a bit of Charles Dance.
Do we? Could have been Bond too, apparently. Well,
that's definitely a pub question waiting to happen. You know, which Bond film had Charles Dance in it?
We knew of him from The Golden Child, and it was like, oh, amazing. Yeah, look, that looks a bit like him. That looks a bit like the devil, basically. From that film. So we were terrified of him anyway. And then slightly less terrified of him, but he was still a bit of a threat. But Locke is a great villain again. We do get one of the best death scenes in the whole series, don't we, with him?
You left this with Ferrara, I believe.
Yeah.
You have to file that moment with That's for Double.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's definitely from that same school, isn't it? Super.
Obviously,
I have a worrying theory about Moore, though, because I love Moore. Love his Bond movies. But whenever I read these stories, that he always seems to dislike the scenes that I like the most. Like there's the rumor that he had to be talked into that scene by John Glenn.
Yeah,
he didn't like the scene in A View to a Kill where all the miners were mowed down. He had issues with the scene in Octopussy where he shoots the young Russian kid in the forehead.
Yeah,
I'm thinking these are the badass moments that I love. As much as I love the hard currency, you know, I love all that stuff. All his badass moments. The ones that I love them. If I had a sort of top 5 Moore moments, I'm thinking, I don't think Roger likes stuff that I like.
I'm so sorry. I've got to get it off my chest. I'm so sorry. You'll have to take this out probably, Tom. But ever I go to like an amusement arcade with my kids and they all come and want money to go on the 2p machines and they keep going, you know, like, but when I get to the last ones, it's constant. My wife is sick of me, like, thank God for hard currency. Give them a handful of 2p's to get to them.
Keep going, 2p.
Yes, that's next. Oh, yeah. Bond infiltrating real life, you know, in ways that jeopardize a marriage, basically.
Coming up in part 2, we discuss the henchmen of the Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig eras, and maybe finally decide who our favourite henchmen or women are.
Time Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.